I'm going to talk about some recent developments in combinatorics, I should say, which revolve around random increasing subsequences and random permutations. But this talk is basically going to be shorter than the title, so you'll see. And it's not going to be a survey; it's rather be an example of what kind of things we will look at and what kind of results we are able to produce. And moreover, for pedagogical reason, I decided to even to conceal until the end of the talk the random permutations. So I chose an example where the random permutations kind of are below the surface, although they play the prominent role. And so you will not see them until the last three transparencies or so. So I start with just an example of some just pretty combinatorial objects, which there is no claim that it has any relation to, that it's a model of any physical object. So let's just, what I want to talk about just a cascade of growth models, and RSK, they stand for Robinson, Stenson, and Knuth, who considered a combinatorial correspondence, of which this is just a disguised version, so it's like a sugar coating on a pill of this combinatorial correspondence. And if you wish, this is just my way of explaining to a physicist what this combinatorial correspondence is. So I want to think of it as a cascade of growth models, and what a growth model is just a function h, which is a function of three variables, of the spatial variable x, of time t, and one extra variable k, which I call the level. And now h takes discrete values, here it is, and x, my space and my time, they are continuous, and level is labeled by 1, 2, 3, and so forth. Okay. So now what this picture is supposed to illustrate, it's only that we have a bunch of growth processes, and the growth which is going to be happening here is that this vertical boundaries are going to move in the direction of in the direction indicated by arrows. So that's pretty much the content of this picture which takes up entire slide. Now I guess firstly there should be any questions about this transparency. Now, what is the dynamics in this? Let me point out from the beginning one more time that this is just a disguised version of some combinatorial construction. So it's just my view that it's easier to think about this rather than about the actual combinatorics. Say it again.
The height seems to be getting smaller from k to k.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be eventually the case. Yes. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. I am going to tell the rules. Yeah. So now what's the dynamic? There is some deterministic parts of the dynamics and the randomness of the dynamics. Now, that's the deterministic part. Now, what is happening is that this vertical boundaries, they move with the unit velocity in the direction shown. And now that's sort of the dull part of the dynamics. Now, a more interesting part is this, when the two boundaries collide like this on a level k, then they annihilate on this level, and they produce the corresponding pair of boundaries on the next level. It's kind of reincarnation kind of thing, right? If you know this two disappear, and then in the next reincarnation they appear on the next level. Okay. So in particular, if you're thinking of maybe the physically most interesting level would be just the first level, where nothing like this, nothing like this pops out of the blue. But okay, here's I suppose this picture speaks pretty much for itself. So this is what is so the point in the point x naught t naught in space time. We have this collision of two boundaries. And so this is the state of the process at the time immediately before the collision, and that's the state of the process at the time immediately after the collision. Okay. Well, it is rather clear that if we just follow this dynamics, then all interesting parts will disappear in finite time, and so we have to fit somehow the fit some energy into the system, and this fit will be random. So now I'm going to do random fit. So what I'm doing is on the first, very first level, randomly in space and time, I'm going to create this little jumps. You know, and this is, I think, something in growth model circles. This is called nucleation, I believe. Well, I'm not an expert anyway on the growth model. So in other words, so what this event is that I create this little pair of discontinuities randomly. They're going to be random. No, this event, the events of nucleation will be distributed randomly in space-time, and that this random field will be just Poisson random inside the forward light cone. That's just it's not very important to just. Okay. So this finishes the description of the model. I hope I made clear what is going on. Now, what sort of behavior does it demonstrate? Now let me pick one particular initial condition. This one, where just nothing, empty world in the beginning, and then I fix some h, x and t, some space time, and I look at the now that as you rightfully pointed out, it's easy to see then that the as the level increases, the h will be decreasing function of the level. So if I plot h as a function of the level, it's going to look like this, like the staircase function, right? Now the continuous variables x and t are fixed, and we all are left with the discrete variables, so we have this staircase shape. Now that's very realistic how it will actually look for some large time. Well, actually, what's important is not the time, but rather this parameter theta, which is what it means is just the expected size of if you measure the size of the shapes by the numbers of the squares, then that's just expected number of squares, and that's analytically it's really easy to show that this is this. So that's going to be our main parameter, the theta, which just it's better to think about theta rather than time. Basically, it measures time. And then now we were going to talk a lot about this shape, but maybe one thing I point out on this transparency is that the height at the first level and both the total number of levels which are excited, they're both asymptotic to 2 root of this parameter theta. That this 2 is actually a pretty famous constant here. It's a Oh, you can no. I'd rather define it like this. Yeah, and then it's pretty easy to see that this is this. Okay. And now, so for the next 5 transparencies or so, we will be discussing the probabilistic properties of this. So we have some random shape. You know, the thing is random. We're going to discuss some probabilistic properties of this function h of k, right? Some random object. Now, in the first approximation, maybe you should also point out since translation to the language that I am used to. This, if you think all the distribution of this h as a function, so we have sort of random function h of k, right? And so if you think of this. So we have a distribution of such functions, and it's actually in combinatorial world it's known as the Planck-Rolle distribution. If you see a paper about Planck-Rolle measure, this is this thing.
Like
say again?
Like
no, it's actually well. Yeah, I'll show you what the exact formula is. Now the first order here has been known for a while. Oh, right. Before I go on, let me point out. So it's actually easier to rotate the coordinates. So h and k, of course, are very nice natural coordinates, but I'm going to be more thinking in terms of this u and v. it's actually easier to work in this coordinate. It's in other words, we think about this random shape as looking like this. Right? So that's, well, maybe like this, right? So it's actually, if you're actually writing a paper on the subject, it's actually very useful to rotate the picture like this, because it saves you, you know, space, and the page looks better. So now the shape, the limit shape of this has been known for a while, like I said, and it's been known that in here this formal definition of this variable tangent u and v, that's just I scale this by root of theta to make it unit, to make the shape of B of unit area. And it's been known for a while that this limit shape is given by this formula, which is not a very limiting formula to remember. I'll give you a better formula later in the talk. It's known what it is. It's not the error function. So and now what I'm going to do next is that I'm going to talk about fluctuations about this limit shape. Okay. So like I said, you don't have to memorize this formula, because we'll see a much better formula, which this is can be obtained by simple integration. So. Yes, right. This thing has lots of symmetries, and it's, for example, you can show a priori that this thing is actually, if you think of this, this random thing is actually symmetric with respect to flip, which is not terribly profound, but also not very obvious from what I said.
Right. So, is there some simple reason?
Yes, there is a simple reason for this. No, not on the level of this growth model. At least not that I know. I mean, this growth model is just my way of making this combinatoric more digestible to you. And that's not the way I think normally. So in terms of what I think, this is pretty obvious that this thing is symmetric. The process is exactly symmetric. The process is the same if you just flip this thing. This is a random shape, and I'm saying that if you flip, the process will stay the same.
There's an even more fundamental question for the rest of you. We're just going to work in this. Where did you get this growth model? I mean, where does it come from?
Well, like I said in the beginning, this is actually just the disguised version of some combinatorial algorithm, which was considered by Rodenstein, Sensen, and Knuth, who were thinking of basically how to produce, given a permutation, how to produce a pair of other combinatorial structure known as semi-standard tableau, but never mind what it is. What this is just a disguised version of that. It's just how I would explain to a physicist what this combinatorial. If you go to the bottom of it, it's just some combinatorial rule. So given the nucleation, how to determine the shape is just.
Yeah.
I motivated by a real deposition.
Yeah, right. I think so. What has some physical meaning probably is just if you think just about the first, forget about all the levels. Think about just the first one. Then you don't have this. Let me go to this slide. This was sort of the interesting part of the dynamics, but now forget about everything below the first level. Then you just, this life after death just never happens. You have some reasonable growth model which you can reasonably be interested in. And some people are actually writing some of the subject. There has been somewhat related paper by Prehofer and Spohn very recently. Okay. So like I said, that's what I'm going to do now is, since I already told you what the limit shape is, what I want to talk about is fluctuations about this limit shape. And it is, so the beauty of this particular thing is this, it is very, very exactly solvable. And so one can say very precisely what sort of, in a sense, exact shape is. So now what, now I need some language to do this. Like I said, this U and V coordinates are nicer than the natural H and K coordinates. So what I want to do is now I want to rotate. Let me rotate my shape like this. And now if I look at the boundary of the shape, it's just a zigzag path. Right? Look at this point where it goes down. And mark the corresponding point by a bullet here in the U line. It's just some random bunch of points. If you do the elementary geometry, you will discover that this is this bunch of points. It means you take H at the first level, subtract 1, H at the second level, subtract 2, H at the third level, subtract 3, and so forth. It's just a bunch of, so since H was random, this is just a random bunch of integer points, right? So in other words, put it another way, it's just a random process on the integers, right? So it's just for every integers, it's randomly either in this set H or not in this set H, right? So it's just we have some random subset of integers. That means, you know, put it another way, it's just a random 0-1 process on the integers, right? So it's either for every single, so if we look at every point here on the U coordinates, it's either marked by a bullet or not. So it's either 0 or 1. And so we can a way to describe, now my language for describing this random process would be in terms of correlation functions. Namely, I pick some arbitrary set X, and I ask what's the probability that X lies in this random set H, right? This determines the random process completely. So it's as soon as we give an exact formula for this, it means we have a complete description of what this random shape is. Okay, any good questions? Good. So what we will see on the next transparency is a very exact formula for this, and it's surprisingly exact. Now, here it is. This probability is a determinant. And what you put in this determinant, the determinant has rows and columns, and your rows and columns are going to be indexed by elements of your set. So, and then the corresponding entry is the value of a certain function called kernel, traditionally, on these two guys. Right? So the size of this determinant in particular equals the size of your set X. So it's like very, very standard thing in random matrices that the endpoint correlation functions are n by n determinant. By endpoint correlation function, I mean this correlation function for X of size n. Okay? And now kernel has this remarkable formula. I mean, I'm still amused by it. It has this very nice expression in terms of just Bessel functions. And I point out that this is an exact formula. It's like it's for finite theta. It's a totally exact formula. And what is slightly unusual is that the spatial arguments here go into the indices of Bessel function rather than into arguments. And what goes into the argument of the Bessel function is this parameter theta, which has the meaning of time, so to speak. It's just, I just recall what the definition of this theta is. Okay, now in a sense, it's a complete solution, and now if you're interested in some asymptotic regime, you just do some step-of-descent kind of thing, and suppose you're interested in some asymptotic regime, as theta goes somewhere, then it's only a question about the corresponding asymptotics of the Bessel function. Well, this is the... No, I wouldn't say it's obvious, no. No, it's actually, if you try to prove, well, let me put it this way. If you try to prove it from the definition of the Bessel function, it makes a surprisingly good exercise on the theory of Bessel function. It's rather non-trivial. You have to do a lot of identities if you want to prove it from the definition of the Bessel function. Please. I may not be familiar with the exact model they have in mind, but in random variables you see a lot. I mean, in random matrices you see a lot of Bessel functions, and I. Okay, I have to probably look it up. Now what you do next is, like I said, well, suppose let's put it to some asymptotic regime, and so in this bulk of, so we have this shape, and it has two distinct parts, namely the bulk and the edges. And so let's look at the bulk. In the bulk, what I'm claiming is that it's pretty easy to see from that formula that this random process H converges to, again, random process, again, with determinantal correlation kernel, which is just the sine kernel. Of course, we're well known that correlations in eigenvalues of random matrices have this shape. Although, I have to point out that the arguments it takes are confined to the lattice, so it's the formula is identical to what you see in random matrices, but the physical meaning is not. And then this alpha is just think physically, it's just the density of this steps that you have here. It's just, you know, how many, because the distribution of this random process H is just it tells you what the distribution of this little steps that you have here, and this alpha is just the density of these steps, and so it describes to you the tangent, basically the tangent lines of the limit shape. So if you remember just this formula given just by our cosine, here you can by integration deduce the limit shape. And one more thing is that, well, one qualitative thing for this, although it's not quite the same thing you see in random matrices, but it has one qualitative feature. If you have a random process like this, it has the tendency of what's called repulsion of eigenvalues. It means that the eigenvalues really dislike each other and really, don't like to be put into, you know, very closely to each other. And this has the same property, in the sense that this thing is really, really unlikely to have large horizontal vertical steps. It'd be pretty evenly distributed to, the approximation of the limit shape would be much better if it's compared to, for example, the trajectory of the random walk. You know, the random walk would have a much, much bigger deviation from its average than this guy here. Now on the edge, okay, now what about the edge? On the edge, if you were a scale like this, so it's just maybe for the first side, it's just maybe it's more important to remember the exponents are here. And if you're a scale like this, you get the convergence to the distribution of the maximal eigenvalues of random matrix. And this is it's equivalent to this conjecture put forward by Baek, Dave, and Johansson. And, well, maybe a remark here is in order that when at the time the conjecture was made, random matrices were considered as something much better understood than, say, random permutations. But now I think maybe it's just just the fluctuation in the progress of mathematics, but I think at this particular time, random permutations seem to be better understood than random matrices. So at least we have, you know, much more satisfying picture for random permutation than for random matrices in a variety of ways. Now, where are those random permutations that I keep talking about? So the random permutations are, which so far have been hidden from the view, are they occur like this. So remember that we're looking at some point x and t in space-time, and our nucleation is it, so I, just by my order, the nucleation were distributed in the forward light cone. That means anything which affects what's happening here is, you know, should have happened in this rectangle. And it's also pretty clear that the only thing which is important is the relative order in which the nucleation happens. It's not, you know, where exactly they happen. And so in this relative order is described by a permutation, which you can see if you rotate to the light cone coordinate, then you see that the relative order is just a permutation. For example, whatever has the first coordinate in this psi plus has the fourth coordinate here, so for the second has the first, and so forth. So you have, in other words, this is just a graph of a permutation, this dot. If you just plot the permutation, this is what you see, right? Okay, let me explain one more time. So, suppose a nucleation appears at some point in space-time, right? Then the effect of this nucleation will be felt on this line, so the light cone coordinates which go out of this point, right? And then in particular, if we have a point here, you know, anything which can possibly influence here, all this nucleation has to happen inside this rectangle, because they have to happen inside the backward light cone, just by what I said, and they have to happen inside a forward light cone by just. Because I said that the nucleation will be happening in the forward light cone. And also the exact position of this nucleation isn't important, because we're looking at something discrete, right? So if we vary the nucleation a little, the thing stays the same. So only the relative position is important. Only the order in which sort of the effect of this nucleation reaches certain points, this is the only thing which is important. And the relative position is encoded just by a permutation, right? So it's just discrete invariant is just a permutation. And moreover, if you do the combinatorics, here this permutation, like I said, is 4, 1, 2, 5, 6, 3. This 3 just means that whatever had the last coordinate in here in psi plus coordinate has the third coordinate in psi minus coordinate, right? And it's probability zero event. They potentially can't. And then you have to. Yeah, I'll talk a second in the next transparency one. If you change the probability distribution, that it is probable that they may be on the same, even on the same site, and they may be the same. Invariant like what? Probably there are tons of invariants, but maybe.
You mean the physical
properties
of the
position
are there some
invariants?
Things like area.
No, area increases, of course. Everything increases, but no, there you can.
Obvious one,
huh? Yeah. So now just a little bit of combinatorics. Now here I'm saying that H will have this following form. 2, 4, and then all zeros. And then the combinatorial rule is that if you want the sum, let me use this pointer. The sum of coordinates from up to here is, so first the sum of H and H of 1 and H of 2, what's the combinatorial rule of this? It's the maximal number of elements you can put into two increasing permutations. Two increasing sub sequences of sigma. See, in other words, the sum of H up to the place M is the maximal number of elements you can put into M increasing sub sequences of your permutation sigma. Suppose you want to, you know, in other words, suppose you, well, actually, a lot of interest in creating sequences business came from people interested in playing cards. Well, suppose you're playing solitaire and you are allowed to only form M piles. Then if the deck of cards comes in a random order, then if you only allowed to stack your cards in order, then there'll be some number of cards you can maximally put into M piles. So this is the same, the sum of KH in first M columns is this, the maximal number of elements you can put into M increasing subsequence. Let's check this in this example. And the first has to be 4. That means, well, here's 1, 2, 5, 6. That's the longest increasing subsequence. And then the sum of the two is 6. Well, we have one is 1, 2, 3, and the other is 4, 5, 6. So it checks in this situation. Well, you don't have to, it just gives you a little bit of taste of combinatorics involved. Let me, do I have any time left? Okay. Okay, now, let me just give a slight sense of a generalization of this thing, just to mention the integrable system that I had in the title. But suppose I confine the nucleation event to a grid, and the distribution of the nucleation at certain sites has geometric distribution with the parameters, where this guy, A and B, are just the free parameters in the problem. I give myself potentially infinitely many free parameters by replacing the continuous thing with the grid, and then also assigning to each line of the grid a certain parameter. And now, it's not maybe physically very interesting, but it has this nice connection to integrable systems, because what is happening here is you again have this where you had the Bessel function, you again have the determinant of some slightly more general function, but let me draw your attention to this thing. Well, fix any x and shift it by all integers. I mean, you take a fixed x, fixed set, and you shift it, you know, to the left and to the right by all integers. And then if you look at the corresponding probability, that would be a sequence of functions. And what I'm saying is that in these variables, they form they are tau functions of an of the two toda, which is a, you know, very, very large integrable hierarchy. And in particular, in this case, when we had only theta, that was sort of our time. This is the time in the previous case where we had only theta, that reduces to the usual toda equation, and that's this has the this is the time in the usual toda. Well, essentially the time. And what I'm saying is take a fixed subset. Well, it's unfortunate we have two different uses of letter M. Take a set of size N and shift it by all integers. It's a different thing. Yeah, and the kind of thing which sort of generalizes the Bessel function here is the following: the generating part of the Bessel function is of course exponential of basically quadratic polynomial in the auxiliary variable. Well, what if you take now if you take just any Laurent series or any Laurent polynomial, if you pick a coefficient of z, that'd be some obvious multivariate extension of the Bessel function. And this is what's going to replace the Bessel function in what we had before. And maybe just to finish, let me point out that if you ever saw how n soliton solution to the total like hierarchies look like, they do involve stuff like this. And so what we see is actually what this n port correlation are, it's a certain piece of that n soliton solution. It's actually mathematical, it's a pretty close related. And I don't have no idea if it's related physical. So I guess that will be all.
which is connected between, let's say, a given physical deposition model or a given statistical physics model, and on one hand, and on the other hand, random matrices, integral theory, and all that. Is there a systematic view that you can apply or explain to people that says if you have a problem in which you have a distribution of energy levels, which is what this is about, I can come up and tell you how to explain this fitness with a random matrix model?
Well, even if I had a view, it probably would be impossible to explain it in a minute. But I think that my approach to this is more sort of I'm more combinatorial person. I'm more interested in solving something exactly. But then there is this view of universality that says if you have exact solution, that probably should the whole interest in random matrices is that they should be like some universal kind of answer to a lot of questions. And what we really see here is just pinpointing one particularly nice solution inside some presumably very large universality class. But if you modify the rules of the game just a little, the whole exact solvability goes to disappears. And I can make a sort of physical or philosophical claim that the basic provisions of the results would remain the same, but I have no mathematical way of justifying it.